Hi there. Thank you for listening to Hashtag NATO Jobs, the podcast. My name is Julie, and I'm your host for this first season of conversations with NATO staff about working for the Alliance. Each episode, I have a chat with one of the staff members to discuss their experience. They give you an insight into their personal NATO journey from A to Z. What made them decide to apply to NATO? How do they feel their current job allows them to make an impact? And what would they say to someone who's thinking of applying? Today, I'm sitting here with Rebecca Obstler. So, Rebecca, how are you today?
I'm okay, thanks. I've got a lot on my mind today, but doing really well.
Okay, well, thank you for taking the time to meet me here in the studio to have this conversation and to give some insight about what it's like to work for NATO International Staff. Before we kick off, can you tell us a bit about yourself, please?
Sure. I'll limit it to what I do here. So I joined NATO about 5.5 years ago. My role here is the head of the digital outreach section. I'm here at NATO headquarters in Brussels. And that includes the NATO.int website, the at NATO and at NATO Poruski social media, multimedia, which is photo and video coverage of NATO activities and initiatives, and broadcast. So in all likelihood, if you've seen something about NATO, our team probably had a hand in making it. Even broadcast journalists use our footage to tell their stories. The studio we're sitting in is part of our broadcast team's infrastructure. They're actually recording this podcast, and then my colleagues on the content side will work with you to review it and make me sound good.
I can assure you, you already do. You sound good. Like I told you before, you have a really nice voice to listen to. You already told us a bit now about your experience, what you do here at NATO, but can you give us some insight into your pre-NATO experience and how you ended up here?
Of course. I've had significant pre-NATO experience, so I'll try to keep it short. So I've been in communication one way or another since I got a degree in English literature. And since 2004, I've been at international governmental organizations and somewhat of an alphabet soup of UN and other international organizations. So that includes FAO of the UN, IMF, IMO, between which my email address changed by one character, FAO again, and then UNICEF. And the themes related to development and also to humanitarian. And I worked on topics from avian influenza to maritime law to macroeconomics to child rights in multiple languages. Digital is a natural fit for me. I'm a Gen X digital native, so I've been techie and digital for a long time. And my last role before NATO was head of global web at UNICEF. So why NATO? I don't know that I necessarily saw myself at a political military alliance, but I'd been thinking about making a move. I'd been getting a master's in international relations and specifically international negotiation and conflict resolution. When I saw a position in the job aggregator that I used. So who knew? I've been really happy and fulfilled here. I'm moved by the mission, which is deeply linked to that of all the other IGOs. I'm enthusiastic about the work, and I'm dedicated to my wonderful colleagues. Something that I got a sense of during the recruitment process that turned out to be the right instinct.
Good. And so after having worked at all those different international organizations, what was the biggest difference for you when you joined NATO?
To be honest, there are a lot more similarities and differences between these organizations, no matter how each organization is specialized. In fact, even though NATO was quite a change from my earlier experience, it really felt like plug and play when I joined. In fact, the first few months I was here, my boss would talk about the years since I'd arrived. Years, she thought. So same values, same respect for resources. There are a lot of similar mechanisms to carry out our work. So what is different, to answer your question? So NATO is, of course, an alliance of many fewer members than your average IGO or International Financial Institution, IFI. So there were 29 when I started. There are 31 now. And we're comparing this to some 190 at other organizations. The other thing I found incredibly interesting here is consensus. So NATO, of course, takes decisions based on consensus of all allies. But what's fascinating is how that trickles outward and down and infuses all of what we do. So consensus is a principle of NATO, but it's also in our DNA at all levels.
What's really fascinating to me is I've talked to a lot of people, and you're the first one to say that, when I arrived, I kind of felt as if it was plug and play.
Bureaucrat is a bureaucrat is a bureaucrat. What can I say?
Okay. And so what is it that you do exactly on a daily basis?
Okay, so for me to contextualize what my job is, I want to move back a little bit and talk to you a little bit about the context I sit in. So the division I work in is called the Public Diplomacy Division, and we're responsible for building support for NATO among our allied audiences. So as for what the team does, my elevator pitch for what we do is that NATO prevents conflict and preserves peace for nearly a billion people. For most of these people who will never interact directly with NATO, digital NATO is NATO. So what do we actually do? Well, we communicate. We enable others to communicate about NATO. And we promote coherence among allied communicators. Okay, now I can situate myself in this. I'm a section head of a busy section of around 35 people doing some highly visible and high demand work, which means that I create an environment in which this team can make the magic that they make every day. So this means I oversee our financial, budgetary, and human resources. When I mentioned bureaucracy earlier, I don't actually say that as a negative. I mean, this is really our enabling functions here. I'm also responsible for the ongoing digital transformation of NATO's public communication and even to extricate digital outreach, as if most of what we do isn't somehow linked to digital, is not really fair. I mean, it really is quite a divisional effort and way beyond that. This is also about investment and coordination and dealing with a variety of external stakeholders, including speaking engagements. And finally, a fascinating part of my portfolio is representing the division on cyber defense.
It seems like a lot what you're doing. Of course, you're managing a team of 35 people. What do you think the biggest challenge your team is facing right now is?
You know, this is a team that does a highly visible work area, and there's also a lot of demand on this work area on a day-to-day basis. So the thing is that we're built to deal with this kind of demand. We made a lot of adaptations a few years ago at the outset of the pandemic because everything was driven online. But at the end of the day, this was just an acceleration of a process that was already on, you know, we were already undergoing this process. This is what we call the digitalization of NATO's public communication. So that's something that we had already put into play that we were accelerating quite a bit. I think that one of the things that's a challenge now is since Russia's brutal invasion of Ukraine, we've had a lot of increase in public interest in NATO. You may have heard this from other people who you interviewed. So what does this mean? We have a lot more followers. We have a lot more people who are interested in our activities. And we really have, we have an obligation to meet that need. We have an obligation to give people the information they're looking for. And it's really clear where we're going. Yeah. You know, with other actors, we're all using the same brand and we're all being very clear and coherent. But additionally, we make things. I mean, we make things that others can use, you know, and we don't control what others say, obviously. No. You know, we make something like, you know, a video of the Secretary General speaking or photographs, and news outlets pick those up and regular citizens, and they make their own content. So other content creators out there are using the images that we create and some of the assets we create, speeches, you know, audio of speeches, things like that, to create their own content and really tell their own stories to their own audiences about what NATO's doing. And that's good and bad. I mean, you know, we obviously like it. It helps to multiply, you know, it helps to multiply what's happening and what the alliance is doing. But it also, you know, there are some bad actors out there who use this information to deceive as well. So
yeah, exactly. That makes sense. And so you're managing all of this, as you told us, managing a large team of 35 people. Could you tell me a bit about that?
So management is a core part of my job. I mean, it really is the alpha and omega of what you do with a team of this size. One of the things that that we've created over the past few years in particular is a strong structure to our team. So it's really a network of extremely talented team leads, and most of them have actually onboarded within the past 3 years. In fact, because of an uptick in activity, we got it's the only word for it is lucky that we actually were able to onboard, I think it's 9 people in 2020 during the pandemic, you know, the beginning of the pandemic, which was really, really quite incredible and necessary because of the demand on our services during that time and on communication in general. Of course, there's, you know, the rest of the team who keep us grounded and really have their deep experience. So Since I started, in fact, team building and change management have been the bones of my work, and also the work of the different managers. I think I just did a tally because we're doing a little presentation later today. And currently, there are 37 members on our team, including interns, et cetera. And 65% of these people have onboarded within the past 4 years, which is a really big change.
And I can imagine it must have stretched you as well as a manager to go through the hiring processes, incorporating all those people in your team, making them feel part of it. Could you share some insight on that?
Change management in general.
Yeah. What's it been like for you, your personal experience?
I feel like, you know, it's funny that you ask that. I had left a job where I had recruited, I don't know, it was something like 8 out of 13 people in 1 year for my job in, you know, in New York, maybe in 2016, I think it was. And then in 2017, I had gone through the interviewing process here, and I onboarded in 2018 and found myself in a very similar position, which I really wasn't expecting. So really, I don't know. I was a recruiting machine for a long time, and I think thankfully I'd had a lot of experience doing a lot of recruiting. And so, and we had, you know, NATO was really hungry to invest in digital, and so we had kind of a perfect storm of, in a good way, of, you know, the desire to recruit and the money to onboard all of these people. And then it really is, like you said, it's a lot of hard work. And so a lot of people doing a lot of good work, reviewing a lot of excellent applications, and that's how we got where we are now.
Oh, that's amazing. And like you said, you probably arrived at the right time to be in the middle of that, to be part of it and to help the team grow and become what it is today.
Yeah, it's really one of the most gratifying things. We talk about challenges and opportunities. Opportunities are challenges, really. It's been an opportunity because we've really been able to create something here, which is really exciting. It's exciting because it brings a lot of different perspectives and a lot of talent.
I talked to you earlier and you said something that really stuck to me, and it was showing the art of the possible. And what you're telling me right now, it really resonates with that. Could you tell us a bit more about this showing the art of the possible and what it means for you?
Yeah, I think the context I say that in is really, you know, it pays to innovate. And as much of an institution as NATO is, and as much as institutions can be risk averse, NATO has a pretty good appetite for risk. And so trying and failing at things is not frowned upon here, like you might think. And so it really is about that. It's about, you know, in a certain sense, let's say just in a really banal sense, you want investment in something. We want to build this team. We want to add more people. We want to change work areas. You know, it's a very bureaucratic, banal approach. You start being scrappy and doing whatever you can with what you have to show people, if we had more investment here, this is what you could have. It's like giving someone a taste of like what's possible. But then additionally, it's using the resources we have in ways that really stretch, you know, what we know, what we do, what our experience is, to try to do things differently and see how they resonate and if there are better ways to do what we're already doing. So it's kind of two things.
Okay.
It's the banal thing, but it's also just having the spirit of innovation and pushing.
Yeah.
So it's really talking about when we actually invest money in things, it's talking about scarce resources that have alternative uses. Mm-hmm. And so we're really trying to figure out what the best use is of the resources we have.
And so you've already talked about being involved in a lot of hiring. So you do have a lot of experience sitting at the other side of the table, so to speak, during recruitment processes. Is there any advice that you'd like to share with potential candidates out there?
Yeah, 100%. I love to help people with this type of thing because it's just a nerve-wracking opportunity. Opportunity, remember? okay, so the first thing I would say is wait for an opportunity that actually matches your experience. Our minimum requirements are actually requirements, so it doesn't make a lot of sense to invest yourself in an application that's not going to go very far. And then the second thing I would say is write an excellent application. We read them, and they really do matter. I also think that in any international organization, not just in NATO, you always have to be patient. The international system can feel like a black hole, and you really never know how many hundreds or even thousands of applications that we've received for jobs. So if you don't make it to interview, don't be discouraged. Maybe the next opportunity will be the right one. And then I wanted to add just this is a perspective of not just being a hiring manager, but also someone who sits on other hiring managers' panels for other colleagues around NATO headquarters and beyond. So for NATO specifically, I would say it always pays to be prepared. I mean, that seems really obvious, but NATO values your preparation. It's good to know what we're working on, what our priorities are, and of course, what you're being interviewed for. and if you make it to interview, prepare for a competency-based interview. Read what that is and write down a few examples for each competency. It's a little awkward for some people. So, you know, it's a hard thing to adapt to if you're not familiar with it. So it pays to just be sure that you understand that that's what's going to happen. And really what we're trying to do is we're trying to match your experience to the role, to see you in it. So this is a real opportunity to project yourself into the role for the hiring panel. The other thing I tell people is, again, it seems really obvious, but is always to prepare for the first question. It's going to be something, I don't know, it's in the family of why are you the right person for this job, or tell us about yourself and why you're interested in this role. The reason I say this is because I think it's just really hard to recover from feeling like you didn't do a great job on the first question. You have a whole interview to get through, so really prepare that one. And then I would say also, easy for me to say, huh? Take it easy. we all have nerves. I mean, I'm personally an introvert in an extrovert's job. And specifically, if you're nervous at interview, just remember that everyone on that panel has been in your seat, and some of us very recently. So the goal here is we want you to do your best because we want to make the best choice among candidates who show us who they are. So there's no malice on a panel. It really is about making you do the best that you can do. And then the one thing that I think everybody at NATO should remember is when you get the job, or even if you get close, congratulations. Competitive international recruitments, as you said earlier, are hard work, and you should be proud of yourself.
Exactly. And just taking a chance, and it might lead you to joining a great organization.
Yeah.
So, don't forget about that.
Exactly. And you can also try more than once. I mean, you know, there are plenty of people. I remember when I applied for my current job, I was talking to a colleague about it. And I just said, it's the idea that I wouldn't get it. It was something that I was kind of struggling with. And he said, Rebecca, people apply for and don't get jobs here all the time.
Yeah. And especially, I think if you're a first time applicant, it takes a bit of getting used to the system and the process and how it works exactly. So sometimes practice makes perfect, and it can just help you to prepare better for next time.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, the thing is, you know, I follow subreddits about this as well. Recruitment is hard. It's discouraging. The job market can be really tight and everything. But these recruitments are just, they're animals unto themselves. You know, sometimes you can't draw patterns. That's another thing. Like if you don't get two jobs, they could be for completely different reasons. So it really just pays to be persistent and make sure you don't get discouraged. If this is what you want to do, keep trying.
Yeah. And sometimes you just have the bad luck that there's this one candidate that's just a bit better than you are. And then basically the fact that you're rejected, so to speak, doesn't have anything to do with you. Just the competition was what it was at the time.
It's a really interesting point you make, because that's the type of thing, you know, you imagine that, you know, we have a lot of internal candidates for jobs. And when internal candidates don't get jobs, it really is what we talk to people about. We say, you know, we might tell them, okay, you could have been stronger here, you could have been stronger there. It's always useful to give people some really good feedback. But the other thing is to say, you did okay. You know, you just got beaten. You got beaten by somebody who really had deep experience doing XYZ. I mean, I think that, yeah, I mean, that's not a great conversation to have, but when it happens, I think it really helps people kind of understand that, you know, it is a competitive international recruitment wherever you're coming from. And these are tough. These are really tough.
Yeah. And like you said, almost getting a job is also an accomplishment in itself. Like getting to those final stages, when you have a look at the competition, just the fact that you made it to a panel interview, for example, it already speaks volumes about your competencies, your experience, and what you have to offer.
100%.
Well, thank you for sharing those valuable insights. I think they're very interesting for potential candidates that would think of applying. Is there anything else you would like to add?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, geez, I'm the head of digital outreach. Okay.
I'm giving you a platform. Go
ready?
Ahead.
Here's one of our owned platforms. Okay. Follow us on Twitter, or X, and Instagram. Like us on Facebook, subscribe to us on YouTube, and join our community on LinkedIn, which is actually where you'll see this podcast. If you speak Russian, join the community at NATO Po-Ruski, and follow our Flickr, subscribe to our RSS feed, and our newsletter.
That's an amazing plug.
Also a great way to get to know the Alliance if you're preparing for interviews.
Good point. Yeah.
Every step, I was more interested in the job. I actually try to do that with recruitments that I'm involved in as well, because to me, that's how you woo top talent. I mean, the written test I had asked such interesting questions. I thought, oh, this is very interesting. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, that's exactly what you want people to think when they're looking at a job. Do I want to do this?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, thank you for adding that, Rebecca. It's been really a pleasure talking to you. And to you, our listener, thank you for listening to today's episode. It was our last episode for this season, and I really hope you enjoyed it. If these conversations sparked an interest to work for NATO, please have a look at our website, nato.int, so that's nato.int, and click through to our career section. And of course, stay tuned for the next season of conversations with NATO international staff.